Hey, everybody, welcome to Quest for Peace. I'm Aya Zaktar, and if you've ever watched this show, you know it's about my experiences looking for a peaceful life. Last week, I kind of ranted a bit about how I felt like a total phony because I was not at peace last week. Today, I feel pretty freaking good. So there's really no reason for that other than it's been a nice day, watched a lot of TV, haven't done a whole lot, and I've got a lot of planning to do. And today, we don't really have a guest so much as like we had a guy who was like, hey, I'm here. You want to talk? I said, sure. So Andrew Zarian is here. How's it going, Andrew?
Hey, I'm glad that I'm here. I was hanging out for a little bit and I've been trying to push my way back onto the show because it's actually one of my favorite podcasts to listen to because I'm still seeking peace.
You know, I had a friend of mine say that they've heard this show and that kind of freaked me out a little bit because I'm pretty open on this program and they're a work friend. So I'm like, wait, they get that kind of insight into me. They might be a little bit more afraid of me. Like, I'm insane, and I'm quite aware of that. So what I wanted to talk about today is stuff. You guys know this already. I'm in the process of moving. Finally got, at least my realtor has the keys to the apartment. He sent us measurements to this apartment. He actually went in and did all the measurements for us, which was really nice. So we got to determine what's going to survive and what's not going to survive. And one of the things I learned a long time ago about happiness, stuff never freaking makes me happy. And I know, Andrew, I know you have a huge problem getting rid of stuff.
I do. Number one, I totally agree with you about the whole happiness thing. Ever since I was a kid, I had this weird thing where, like, I would want something, and I would get it, and within a week I'd be done, and I'm always searching for the next thing. So happiness, you're absolutely right. Stuff does not ultimately bring happiness. It could potentially, for the moment, make you a little bit happy. But I have a big problem with letting go of stuff. It just never happens for me.
I read this book a long time ago. I talked about it on a previous episode called It's All Too Much by Peter Walsh. You ever read that book?
No, I've never read it.
He used to do a show called Clean Sweep on TLC, I think. And it basically is about not hoarders, but people just have too much junk. They want to get free of all this stuff. And this idea in the book that I read that made it a lot easier for me to like just get rid of stuff was, if you really have an object that you want to keep, you should put it in a place of respect. So if you have, like, let's say you were an athlete at some point and you had a jersey that you just keep kind of crumpled up in a drawer somewhere, that's not really going to bring you any happiness. You should be, you know, putting that up on a wall, like in a frame or something, to say, hey, look, I really do care about this. Otherwise, it doesn't do you any good. And I'm realizing for this place, because I basically have to empty out a whole bunch of boxes and stuff just to get rid of this stuff. I haven't used half of the stuff that's packed up. I haven't unpacked. I've just moved last year. So if I haven't used it yet, I'm probably not going to need it in Manhattan. Why can't you get rid of your stuff?
I don't know. You know, it's something I think probably from my childhood. My parents were people that never got rid of it. It just went to the attic. Things just went to the attic and you never saw it again. And maybe 15 years from the time that you put up in the attic, you would go up and be like, hey, remember this weird pharaoh statue your friend got me from not Egypt? And you look at it and you're like, oh, we should throw it away. And somebody would say, no, I want to keep it. So like that's just how I've always been. Like, I'm holding this in my hand right now for people watching. It's not a screwdriver. It's a handle to a tripod that broke about 4 years ago. I have yet to throw this away.
Are you thinking you're going to find a tripod that has that?
I'm thinking, what if my tripod, my current tripod, something happens to the handle and I need a replacement handle?
And you think that's going to fit perfectly to the point where you want to keep
it? It hasn't. I mean, that exact scenario happened like twice and, you know, it didn't work, obviously. But I cannot let this go. This is too good to throw away. I may need this.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I was reading in that book explaining how people end up keeping stuff. One, they grew up with it, or this, I might need it one day.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm trying to tell myself, because I used to have boxes and boxes of, in case I need this. Like, I mean, nobody needs 300 USB cables, you know, but I had like a whole ton of them. Or that would just be a box full of them. I'd have way too much FireWire things. I'm keeping old hard drives, which I really should get rid of at some point. But like, I have laptops from 2002. There is no reason
you should
hang on to these things other than to like maybe have an experimental box. But I don't have any plans, you know, in my head for these things. And because I have no plans, I need to come to terms with this to say, I have to say bye.
You know, this is why I really enjoy listening to the show when I'm not on. When I'm on, I can't listen. But I almost feel like, oh my God, I'm not alone. I'm not the only one that's like this. Like, if you look behind me here, I have about 20 hard drives sitting mm-hmm. there. I mean, I could... I'll grab it here. Look at this.
What are you using them for?
These, they're not even SATA, some of them.
You got PATA drives sitting
yeah,
around?
Like, just sitting around. Like, some of them, like, I have one, two, three, two out of the three hard drives are not SATA. I mean, it's crazy. But one day, you never know what's on that hard drive. You may want to restore it. It's a weird thing of letting go, and I think a lot of people have it. I got it a lot more when Jess and I moved together, when we got married and we got the house, when we moved in, I threw away a lot of stuff. And it was a lot of work for me to throw it away. And I had almost gotten over this whole thing of keeping like loose screws or like weird, like, you know, screwdrivers that you're never going to use. I would keep everything in a jar, and then eventually I may use one day. My wife says something interesting. She goes, if you haven't used it in a year, you're not going to use it. So dump it. Get rid of it. We could always buy something if you need to buy it, but there's no point to have 50 different screws when you know you're never going to use it. And it really clicked with me, and I ended up letting go. When I started the network, it all came back because, you know, you're trying to save money on everything that you're doing. You build up this weird collection of wires, and you never know what wire's going to go bad at the last minute. So I have boxes and cases of wires just hanging out.
Yeah, that's why that rule of thumb, the 1 year thing, is really important, because you can get rid of things when you're trying to do projects all the time. I used to do a lot of projects. I had the same feeling. This I'm going to need this one day. And I started realizing that what I could do, I started rationalizing something based on something a guy said on the HDTV podcast. I don't know if you ever listened to that show.
I've heard. Yeah,
it's a good show. And one of the guys, one of the hosts, thinks of Netflix as Netflix DVD, that is, as basically his own personal collection. He's just paying them $10 a month to store it.
That's a great way of looking
at it. That viewpoint changes the way I think, because, yeah, sure, I could want to watch a DVD right now, and Liz has like 1,000 freaking DVDs, and she keeps them in boxes and stuff. I'm not a huge fan of boxes in the first place, but if I just change the concept of, well, they have it there, I will have to wait a day to get it, but that's not such a bad thing, especially because my collection becomes unlimited, and it's always constantly updated. And so this kind of idea of, I would pay for storage space, so if I'm willing to do that, maybe I can free up space by getting rid of my stuff. I wish there was a lot more subscription services like that where I can just be like, well, you know, I might need a USB cable tomorrow. Just send it over. That's Amazon Prime effectively, right? Because I buy everything from them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm paying a storage fee effectively to them. And then when I finally have to pay it off because I have to buy a new cable, that changes the way I think about it. And for like sentimental things, are you sentimental at all?
Yeah. Like I'll tell you a little backstory. This tripod was my father's tripod, and he gave it to me when I was a kid. So I think the reason why I can't let go of this little stupid thing is because it was my father's tripod that he gave to me, and it kind of introduced me to the world of like video, and I'm like, you know, obviously I'm really into this stuff. But I would like to say that like my obsessiveness with keeping stuff is because I'm sentimental, but in reality, like, I keep screws, and there's, you know, that came from IKEA for some desk that I haven't owned in years.
Well, when it comes to that tripod handle in particular, I could see that you put it on a plaque, you know, in case of emergency.
Yeah.
Put it up on the wall. At least you get a, you know, a nice little memory of it. When it comes to stuff from my dad, he died 10 years now? Jeez, it's been a long time. Died a long time ago. And I find myself being really clingy to things. Like, you know, he wrote on this, or this item was his, or, you know, I would get like a little freaked out if that item was messed up, and then realize something. I'm like, wait a second. This stuff isn't really that important. What's like, I'm 50% him, so I can't ever take that away. So I don't really need these things, because I've already been taught a heck of a lot, and I have the genetics. So I don't have any reason to go, well, I can't throw this out. It's like, well, it's just a piece of paper.
Yeah.
If I want to keep, you know, one piece of paper, it's not so bad. But I remember I was clinging onto a lot of stuff. And then again, I read that book, and one of the things it mentioned is like, if you're holding onto an item for memory, there's nothing wrong with just taking a picture of that item, getting rid of the item, keep the picture, and that'll still give you the same feeling that you had of like this. They'll all flood back. I know I do this with my sports tickets and any little, like, not receipts, but like, this is something I got to get rid of. This is from like Pliny the Younger day in Russian River, where I waited for like, I don't know, like 10 hours or something for beer. It's like, I'm going to take a picture of that and then I'm going to toss it out. Like, that's,
have you taken the picture and tossed it out yet? Obviously, you haven't tossed it out, but have you taken
not
the picture?
This particularly. My office? No, my office is a pigsty. So for other things, like when I went to New York and I got to, I was hanging out with my son and we went to a baseball game, I took a picture of the tickets and I threw them out because I was just emptying out my suitcase. So I just had all this stuff, but that actually had happened. This just ends my, if I move this camera around, you saw the amount of crap in here. It's just a mess. There's really no reason to keep having this.
Why do you think you keep some of the stuff that, you know, like, you should obviously throw away? Like, my wife has no connection to anything. Like, people she could connect to, like inanimate objects, it means nothing to her. So she doesn't go upstairs and be like, oh, this was my, you know, my Nona's blanket. Like, she doesn't have that idea of like keeping something because it's sentimental or keeping something because it was somebody else's. I probably have it because of my childhood. You know, I grew up my grandparents and they grew up in, you know, during the war and you hung on to everything. So like, that's kind of engraved in you. But why were your parents like that?
We had the attic and the basement for stuff.
Yeah.
And the garage. And like, basically anything we had, we would never toss out. And wasn't it because we might need it one day? It was just the fact that there was four of us. So if there were toys, they'd hang on to them and they'd be able to pass them along. But then, you know, when you're I was the third kid. So when I get a hand-me-down, it's like missing like three parts and you have a transformer. And so Optimus Prime doesn't have a hand. And they ended up buying another one. So then you keep doing this over and over again. You just basically kept things around for spare parts because, you know, we're four idiot kids who are breaking stuff up. So that's the way I grew up. We kept a lot of stuff like that around. What's funny though is like my mom in the past like couple of years has completely changed things. She used to have like closets and closets full of clothes. And I mean by closets and closets, I mean like I'm thinking, well, you got to think of like a New York closet. So don't think of like a walk-in. But basically she'd fill rooms with clothes and she just basically liked having nice new things. And after a while, she just got rid of like everything. And I mean like almost everything. She basically pared down her entire like wardrobe to like a basically fit like two suitcases worth, which is actually pretty impressive because she used to have all this stuff. So I don't know why I was hanging on to stuff other than sheer right now. This is sheer laziness. This is flat out laziness because I'm hardly ever in this room. And so I don't clean it very often because I'm not here. I'm usually in the living room downstairs or I'm like asleep. So, especially with my current schedule, I don't really value my time to go, yes, I'm going to clean this room that I'm never in. I'm hardly ever in this room. And so that's going to all change with the apartment in Manhattan because I'm going to be in every room all the time. I mean, it's a one bedroom, but it's going to be freaking small.
Well, it's also going to force you not to keep stuff.
That, I like that, that as well, because I looked into minimalism for a while. I was looking at this idea of, you know, how can I get away with having very few items, and you know, dropping the sentimental aspect helped a lot because I didn't have to keep things from my dad, and I don't have to keep things. I want to make sure my son doesn't run into the same problem where like, oh, that was dad's watch. It's like, because what happens if you watch Pulp Fiction? You know, dad's watch becomes a big freaking plot point because you just can't let it go.
Yeah,
and then almost this guy killed like a bunch of times. There's no freaking reason to do that. Okay, a watch is a watch is a watch. And so I completely lost my train of thought. What were we just talking about?
You were bringing up the watch and you were bringing up sentimental values to things and you brought up the watch.
Getting rid of stuff. That's what I'm being forced to get rid of stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the bigger issues that's happened is because I do these kinds of things. I do video shows or I was basically running enough Skype machines to run my own shows and Wirecast and stuff. Even at a minimal level, that requires having a lot of stuff, which is kind of irritating. But I looked into minimalism and basically trying to determine what things do I really need to have at any given time. And I freaking fail as a minimalist, I think, because I'm like, okay, well, I need to at least have a home media server that's like hooked up to the internet that can access and access all my media files anywhere. And I need a backup system just in case that fails. So I need to have two of them at any given time. And there was a reason for that, but it actually works out. But it's basically like having redundancies, but it's weird to be a minimalist with redundancies, but you kind of have to have backups.
I also think that for people in the tech world, which many of your guests are, I think it's very difficult to become a minimalist when you're so engulfed in this technology thing where you have, you know, two or three cell phones and you're reviewing a cell phone and you have, and then every cell phone comes from with, you know, a USB cable and a headphone. So now you have 15 headphones and 15 USB cables. It gets really difficult to become a minimalist when, you know, you're kind of in the tech world where you need these devices, you need some sort of redundancy. I didn't live like the way that I do now. I mean, there's no need for me to have this many computers in reality. Most people, this is insane. But now, because I do it with work, I need a Windows machine and a Mac just in case. Now I need to get my iPad, and I have another iPad because I got the new one, and I have an Android tablet. So this whole minimalist concept, I think I've always been fascinated by it too. But I think it's an extremely difficult thing for someone that is involved in the tech world to become a minimalist and function like a normal person.
Yeah, because I mean, right now I have two screens. I used to be a video editor, so I really needed two screens, but I still don't need two of them now. There's a lot of things.
Now it's cool. Now I have two screens.
It's like, well, it was really helpful for like playing back things. But right now, effectively, this one on the right side is lighting me. Like that wasn't on purpose. That's what it's doing, and it's heating up this room. But yeah, it's hard to be a tech person. And the other thing is digital hoarding. Like having all these things, like I have lots of backups of my photos. I haven't backed up like in three different places because that's like the one thing I won't get rid of, because I don't care if I have like crappy blurry shots of my kid. I want to see the crappy blurry shot because I know why it was crappy and blurry. Kid never stops. He constantly moves. And all it was is a reminder, get a better freaking phone. But yeah, it's like, what is the minimum to make me happy? I'm probably like, I need to have at least for my line of work, I need to have at least one Android device, an iOS device. I need a Windows machine at some point. I need a couple of different machines so I can keep imparting knowledge, because you can't do a CNET how-to if you don't use Windows anymore. Because, I mean, it's the dominant platform and you should know how to use these things. I've been thinking about just getting a Chromebook just to leave around the house. Like, this is the weird thing. Like, they get so cheap. Yeah. It's like, I can have an extra thing.
I almost did that yesterday, as I swear to you. Yesterday I was sitting, you know, about to go to bed, and I saw the Chromebook and I was like, you know what? I got a couple of bucks in my Amazon affiliate, you know, program it built that I just got paid for. Let me just buy this. And I thought about it. I'm like, what am I going to do with it? What am I going to do? I really need to have a Chromebook right now.
The reason why I wanted to get a Chromebook is I can pretty much do most of my work for CNET on. I do it in a web browser. I have several different browsers that are sessions of browsers that let me do what I want to do. And this is why I wanted to do it. Here's the actual thing. This is part of being happy. When I have to go to the bus, I have to carry a backpack. When I carry a backpack, I have to bring my laptop with me so I can have it at home in case I need to work from home. I mean, I can use my main machines, but this is a MacBook Air. It's super thin, super light. I can sit down on the couch and use it. I'm like, well, if I didn't have to carry this 3-pound laptop, I could just leave it at work, and I would be able to move a little bit faster because I have 3 pounds less stuff.
That's so funny.
And maybe I don't need to bring my backpack. And like, it's small things like that where I'm like, is that really going to bring me any happiness? And in some respects, like there was a time where I was taking the ferry into CNET. I was going to Larkspur, and then I'd be on a boat for 30 minutes. And it was about 0.8 miles between the ferry and work. And every little bit of kit I had in my bag was weighing me down. So like, if it's on my back, it's pressed up against my back. So I'm getting slightly sweaty because it's the amount of heat. Like, this is really a stupid idea. So I needed to change the amount of stuff I carried with me to minimalize that. And it's weird because it actually made me happier to have less stuff in there because the bag was lighter. I was able to move faster. I wasn't worried about hitting people as I'm turning around, little things like this. And this all goes back again to the concept of happiness, because when I have this stuff, like whatever stuff I need, it's like, this is, as long as it's in good working condition, I have them around and I know what its true function is, I'm happy with that. But if I have a bunch of crap and I don't know what the hell it's for, then it makes no sense to me. That does not make me happy. It just makes me irritated to see, you know, why did you let it get this bad? Because this is unnecessary. You don't need to keep these things, because when are you going to use this? What is, you know, what pleasure are you deriving? And if you're not getting any pleasure out of it, why are you keeping it?
It's almost like a high for a lot of people, right? With you know, technology or just buying stuff. It's for that instant, it is the greatest moment for that day or for that month, and then it just goes away really quickly. When it comes to technology, I don't look at the item for happiness. I look at the function as far as, you know, how happy I'm going to be. You know something that I really appreciate? I have my laptop. I sit at a bar. I pull it out because I need to do some work. And the Wi-Fi, I connect to the Wi-Fi instantly. I don't have to spend 15 minutes trying to get the Wi-Fi. That's happiness, because it actually would have affected my day if I had to go seeking out 20 minutes to find the Wi-Fi. It would have been aggravated that I couldn't find it. Connecting to it would have been a whole ordeal. But the fact that I was able to do it so instantly and it actually worked was a surprise, and it makes me happy.
That was another thing about spending money for gadgets. I was talking to a mobile phone reviewer at work, and she's like, listen, get, because I'm constantly looking for a new phone because I have a Galaxy S3 and it's a decent phone, does a good job, but the number one thing it can't do is take pictures as far as I'm concerned. Everything turns out blurry, and that angers me because I'm taking pictures of my kid and I want to see them. And so she tells me, like, you know, buy the most expensive gadget you can afford as a phone, because that's going to actually work. And that's why I keep going back to this idea of going to the iPhone again and again and again. Even though the S5 is supposed to be great and HTC is supposed to have some good stuff, at the end of the day, you know, I don't like using those devices because I'm flipping through all these photos and they don't look right. They're being backed up to cloud services. They're blurred. And then I'm angry about it. And so it's, I like to keep money. You know, I like to save money and I want to make sure I have more of it in the long run. But I realize that sometimes I have to, like, just go, okay, don't buy the cheapest thing you can get. Get the thing that's going to be of the highest quality, that's going to make you, I guess, almost the least annoyed. Almost not being annoyed to me is almost happiness. Because that's, like, that's my S3. Like,
you get annoyed really easily.
You know, it's not just like that one instance. It's more like the consistent failure.
Yeah.
When you're ridiculously looking through your files and you're going, where's the clear one? Where's the one? And you finally see one after like 20. And it's so frustrating to see my phone be defeated by an iPad camera.
Yeah.
Because I have an iPad. And I take pictures off of it when my kid's running around. And I'm just like, darn it. I don't want to be an Apple fanboy. I just want a good freaking camera that's on my phone.
Well,
that's,
I mean, I've had the same problem. And I actually did go out and buy an expensive phone. I got the LG G2 when it came out because it had probably the best camera on the market. And it's awful. The camera's awful. So, when I talk about function and when it works, like, I've almost to the fact that, strangely, I always set myself up for failure. I look at things and I look at it in the sense that it is not going to happen, because when it does happen, it actually brings me real happiness. When I take a picture with my camera, guys, when I get a good picture, I'm happy. I'm actually shocked that it actually worked. So, like, it's almost like to the point that I'm like, I know it's going to be a crappy picture. And when it's not, you know, it kind of changes my perspective on what I just did.
That's a way to reframe your brain. Expect the worst. And when you get something good, you're actually happy. And that's how I felt with my old, like, my chintzy phones. But back to this idea of being a minimalist and how I think that for me, that in some respects, it actually made me happy. I think that in getting rid of things, and this particular purge, this is going to be one monstrously large purge. But I have this, the stuff I have now was the result of a purge previously. And so now I'm trying to slim down more of what I have. And there are things I'm hanging on to that I have been hanging on to that I'm like, okay, I have to sell these items. I'm not going to just chuck out my guitars. I'm probably going to keep one, but I have five. I don't need five, especially in an apartment in Manhattan. I got my amp back there. I don't know if you guys, what's behind this mic? When it's going to be really creaky. There's an amp head right there. I've had it for years, and I don't play on it. When I want to play guitar, I hook it right to a computer so I can record. I don't just hook into an amp. They're just kind of vestigial. They don't do anything. So, like, I don't know why I'm keeping these things other than.
And you can't really use it in the city in your apartment, you know?
No, I can't use it. Unless I want to be the most irritating, you know, neighbor in the world, I'm going to have to get rid of it. Maybe. See, the thing is, I have to sell some of this stuff, and I'm not looking forward to that because I don't want to go through the picture taking process. I don't want to go through the shipping process. But I also know if I don't do it, it's going to be a big mistake because I'm going to be very unhappy either storing this or chucking it because I'm not chucking out working stuff. I'm going to donate a ton of stuff to Goodwill. That usually makes me feel good, by the way. Sometimes, like I was talking to Liz the other day. I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll take one of my guitars that are really awesome and I'll give it to Goodwill. And then like one guy or lady will find this at the store and be like, holy crap, this is an awesome guitar. How did it get here? Then she's like, you know, probably an employee will take it. I was like, ah, why did you say that? I wanted to believe, you know, the goodness of people.
No, an employee will definitely take it.
And even if they do, though, I was realizing they're going to get more pleasure out of it than I'm getting right now, which is just, it's just art. It just sits on they're hung on a wall. So I don't really get a lot of pleasure out of them because I'm not using them. And they're great and they remind me of when I used to play, but I haven't played guitar in a really long time. I mean, I don't have my calluses anymore in my fingers. And that used to bring me a lot of happiness. This is one of the reasons why I probably will keep at least one, because I liked playing guitar. But what I did, this happens to me a lot, by the way. I would take my hobbies, and then I almost make them into work. Like when it came to guitar playing, I played guitar. I'm like, this is neat. Well, what if I can play a song? Okay, cool. I can play a song. What if I played bass on that recording? Okay, I can play bass on that. What about the drums? So why don't I just do this? So when you start doing this and you're trying to get a song together, I've made it work. Like it's an actual work, because when I screw up what I'm doing when I'm playing guitar because I think of something else, boom, I got to do it over again and again. And so after a while, you just hate your own song, because at least I'm so bad at times of playing guitar or bass that I'm just like, oh man, why am I making this so painful? I don't know if other people do this with their hobbies where they decide, I'm going to take this to another level. I like doing video, so I'm like, let me make a studio somewhere. Or I like doing audio shows, let me record it this way and then make sure I edit it. So I make everything far too complicated. So I need to minimize that stuff as well. I don't know if I should minimize hobbies, but the big thing is less stuff, more experiences. That was something I want more of. I haven't done a lot of like brand new things. I haven't like gone hang gliding yet. I want to go hang gliding. Do you have a preference for experiences over things yet?
So yeah, kind of, but you brought up something interesting on how you make your hobbies into work. I do the same thing, and I have a friend that's a, you know, she's a therapist, and she was telling me, she goes, that's actually one of the most unhealthy things you could possibly do, because now,
good to know. I didn't know.
What?
Good to know. I've never heard that before. So
yeah, because she was telling me how a lot of people do that if they have a fear of failure or a lack of commitment. If they have a history of not being able to commit to something, they will transform it into work. Like with exercising, with working out. I have made that into a job where I have to do it at 10 o'clock every day. I give myself a 10-minute window of opportunity to do it. If I don't do it, I can't work out for that day, because now I've turned it into work and now I've called out from work that day. She said it is the worst thing you have to do. You could do if you have a hobby or if you have an interest, you have to make it into something that is not work and something that you go and you enjoy, rather than it becoming this this bizarre ritual of yours. Like people that have like obsessive compulsiveness, like it becomes a job for them to do things a certain way. And they can't break those habits. But it makes a lot of sense, because podcasting was my hobby and I made it into my job instantly. I made it into my job so I could continue doing it every week. I knew if I wouldn't make it into a job, there would be no way I would show up every single week. Even if I wasn't making money, I would still show up every week because it's a job.
I'm a routine guy. And the reason why that is because I have no memory. Like I suck at making memories for some reason. Like, okay, I don't remember this. Or did we do it this way? Did we do it that day? I have no idea. So what I end up doing is I try to have the same rituals every day. So I could go, what would I normally have been doing at that time? And I can actually kind of extrapolate what a day would be like.
Yeah.
Because every time I would watch TV and I'd watch like a court scene, like, where were you on the night of April 19th? Like, I have no freaking idea. Even if I looked it up on the calendar, it probably says, probably missing some appointments. So I have no idea about these things. And I used to do that with workouts where I would schedule them. And I just didn't like doing the workouts. I mean, not because they're boring. It's just kind of like, well, I've been doing this and I'm not losing myself in the fun part of it. So that's why I started taking up climbing again, which I really need to do again. There's a lot of currently the stuff that makes me happiest, I'm not able to do. I've been getting a lot less sleep in the past week. I have not been able to work out for a long time because I'm just exhausted. So this is all feeding to itself, right? You're exhausted. You're not going to work out. And you're not sleeping, so you're not going to want to work out. And you don't want to wake up early to work out, especially if I have to get up at 5 to do it if I was going to work out at all.
By the way, let me just say this again. When I say it becomes a work, I don't mean that it becomes a paid gig. I mean it becomes this tedious task where you have to go and commit every single day, and you go every single day at the same time. And when you're off from it, it becomes happiness. When you're not doing it, like your days off from working out should not be a happy day for you.
Agreed.
So many people are like that. So many people go to the gym and they go, oh, good. I don't have to go to the gym today. Today's my off day. And you wonder, why are they happy about it?
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to put it. That's the way I felt about when I do things like Insanity or P90X and it's like a regimented thing, like, and I want to go off of it to do something different, I feel guilty about that. It's like, well, no, I should kind of try to finish this program. And then I realize at some point, I'm like, no, I don't need to finish this program. What I need to do is do an hour of exercise a day and do whichever the hell one I want, because that will make me actually happier. You know, if I'm doing yoga instead of doing, Insanity, like I will definitely do that because it actually calms me down. I stretch out. It's functional. It helps me out. I'm thinking about trying that DDP yoga thing. I've heard it enough times on everybody else's podcasts. I'm like, you know what? Why not? Because I like that movement. I like the idea of clearing my head. When I was doing things like Insanity or P90X, what I would do is I'd have two screens up and I'd be watching TV on one screen and doing the exercise if I could look up, because Insanity, you don't really get to look up. You're just doing everything anyway. And I was like, well, I'm obviously not enjoying this workout if I'm watching TV during it. It's really not like a great pleasure for me. So I'm thinking when I'm going to do these workouts, perhaps I can make it combining it in a way that will make me happy, this idea of meditating there. Which also goes back to the whole theme of not having stuff, because I'm not going to be able to have any space to do this.
What are you doing? I mean, you also collect comic books, right?
I used to.
Okay. So that also feeds into this obsessive compulsiveness of keeping stuff. I collect everything. I have a stamp collection. I have a coin collection. I have comic books. I have baseball cards. I have basketball cards. I still have kept everything. Everything is cataloged. Everything is somewhere in my attic in pristine condition. And that is not healthy either.
Nope. I started thinking about what I want to, because I was a collector of comic books and trading cards and stuff. Eventually, I sold off my collection because I read something about Kevin Smith had done the same thing. He'd sold off his collection and he goes, look, if I make it if I make it as a filmmaker, I can go buy them back. If I don't, well, they're gone then. At least I tried. And so I sold off my collection. I'm like, well, that's actually a pretty healthy idea. It's like, if I really want these books, I will get them back. Like, there's one book I haven't gotten rid of yet. It's Hulk 181. It's sitting over there. The first full appearance of Wolverine. And I was a big Wolverine fan at the time, so I still have that book. But the rest of it's gone. Like, I've sold it off. And I started thinking, like, how can I take that collection habit and make it work for me? And I started saying this phrase of, I collect empty space. I want to collect empty space, because I read this story of a woman who had one shelf up in her home that nothing was ever on. And they asked, what's that shelf for? She goes, that's my collection of empty space. And I was like, you know, actually, that's a pretty interesting idea. Like, you don't need a shelf just to hold stuff, but you're actually explaining that when this person sees it, they realize this is a valuable commodity. Because a lot of people put stuff on shelves that they want to, you know, experience. Yeah, there's my books, or like, here are my CDs, or here's my stereo. But to say that that you actually value empty space, a lot of people just don't do that. And I started realizing that, you know, you got to have some empty space somewhere in your house so you can like walk around and you can have a flow. Otherwise, you're just crammed in and it's a mess. I just want to make sure that I can keep telling myself, collect empty space. I think that might help.
It's actually a great way to live if you think about that. I mean, why keep all that stuff that you don't need? Do you replace it with something else? That's the only time you really dump stuff is when you replace it with something. When it totally breaks and you can't use it. So why not replace the stuff that you no longer need with empty space?
There's that. And back to our discussion of quality. This is an argument that would happen to my dad all the time. He would buy cheap items that would break. and whatever the heck they would be. They'd be tools, or they'd be like gadgets, or they'd be whatever the heck. And they would just break after a set number of times. And I told him after a while, I'm like, look, why don't you just buy the best quality thing you can and just buy it once? Because you might be buying the cheap thing, and you're getting it cheap that first time, but you're going to buy it three times. So why not just go out and get these like quality items? That's another reason of like, if you're going to have stuff, make sure you really enjoy them and they're really quality. Otherwise, you're going to get annoyed with them. You're not going to be just, it's going to cause a pain point. And I don't see I don't see the reason why anybody would do that to themselves anymore. Like, there's no reason to be like, well, you know, if I cheap out on this, it'll make me somewhat more happy because I have like, you know, another 10 bucks in the bank. Or it'll be more like, well, I got a high quality item, I'm happy. You don't even, that's the thing. I don't think people appreciate when stuff works. People don't appreciate enough when stuff works properly unless they have a piece of garbage somewhere and go, this is a pile of trash. I need to really move on to quality items. I'm sure a lot of us have done this enough. We have a cheap meal or we have cheap items. I think at this point in my life, as an old man of 34, I can actually appreciate like well-made items. Even if it's like a mug. You know, like, this is worth it to me instead of getting some dollar store. Who knows where this has been? And does it have lead coming out of it? What's happening with this? Worrying about this. Because the satisfaction I'm going to get can be better. And that satisfaction, these small moments, this is part mindfulness. I like occasionally, and I've been doing this a lot more recently, I've just been like slowing my brain down and going, where are you? How's it going? Oh, this is a nice chair. Stupid things like that. It sounds so incredibly dumb.
I also think that we're conditioned, especially in the U.S., we're conditioned to buy the best possible deal out there. I mean, that's what you're searching for, right? And I get into arguments with my friends. They measure, like, I have a good friend, and she considers herself a foodie. And she'll come to Jess, and she's one of Jess's friends, and she'll go, oh, my God, you got to try this place. The portions are huge. The portions are huge. She's measuring the meal and her happiness and the overall quality of the meal by the portion. And I always thought there's something wrong there. You can't measure the quality based on how much you're getting. And when you finally ask her, like, you know, how is the food though? How good was the food? She goes, oh, the food is okay, but oh my God, the portions. And you think that is such a backwards way of thinking. You're thinking about A, the quantity, two, the price, third, and last is the quality. And it should be totally the opposite way.
Quality should be the number one thing.
But I think that's we've been conditioned. I mean, it's the deal of the day, you know? That's what you're buying.
Yeah, when you go to like, if you go see any commercial for any fast food joint, like KFC, that's a really great example. Like a bucket of chicken. You get a lot of food for a low cost. And you know, it's weird. Every time I see those commercials, I'm like, that's a great idea. I should get that. But I'm like, no, I should not eat that. That's going to cause me grief in the long run. Like, having a lot of something is not necessarily good. I was just thinking, like, having the most valuable thing you can have a lot of, I think, is time. And it's having stuff and, like, having large portions of food and, like, basically causing yourself sluggishness over time. I don't know if that's a great idea. I say this as I have not worked out in a long time. And, yes, I've had, like, my fair share of far too rich foods lately. It's kind of like, man, if you can actually think about that as you are eating, when you're eating a something that has a plate the size of a keyboard and it's massive, and you're like, why is this way? You're right. We're conditioned to believe that here. It's like, you know, get the best deal. Even if you don't need it, you might need it one day. You don't need a 60-inch TV today, but why the heck not? It was on sale. It's Black Friday. Or like, if I went to geeks.com back when that was around, I would buy crap just for the heck of it. I'm like, well, this, you know, I don't really need a video breakout box, but I might need one. I'll get that. And I'll, that's an extra power line adapter. I don't really need that. Let me get one of those. In fairness, maybe about 10% of the items I bought, I actually ended up using. But I mean, I still have packaged, and I don't even know why I have this anymore. It's a Bluetooth adapter that fits in an SD card slot for a PDA. When the hell am I ever going to use
that? When the hell did you buy that?
I don't know. I think I bought it like so many years ago, and I think it was to like revive an old Palm Trio.
Oh my God.
I'll use this as an adapter for something. I don't like this project-based mentality causes this kind of thing. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to pare down the amount of tools I have to take with me, because I have a lot of tools, still do, from, like, you know, being a homeowner. You fix stuff around the house and you start collecting all these tools. But, like, I've got things I probably won't be needing. I, you know, like a jab saw. I probably don't want to cut open the walls of my apartment.
No.
Probably not. Unless I put in a, I probably could. Anyway, if you're listening to this and you're my landlord, I will not be doing that. I promise you. I'm not going to do that. Anyway, I think we've gone all over the place. Are you less happy than when we started this program?
No, I actually, it's very soothing, the show, for me. Because you say something, like, I'll rant, and you say something, and I'm like, yeah, you know what? I do need to start collecting empty spaces. Just every room. I want an empty space everywhere. I just want I want one couch, a very uncomfortable couch, and a very uncomfortable bed, and that's all I need.
Sometimes I wish I could live in the Japanese style of, like, okay, look, where do you sit? On the floor. You know, yeah. What do you have? I love the idea of that. I don't know if I can practically do it. I'm working on that. I'm going to basically force myself into that. And I'm actually quite excited about moving towards a minimalist style. You know, I really want to somehow enjoy that. And I want to figure, like, I want, because I'm going to be doing shows from my apartment, I need to figure out the right, what's the bare minimum I can get away with. Because these two 24-inch monitors, which are LCD, which have, you know, a fluorescent backlight, they're not LED LCDs. So they're massive and they get hot. And they are not – I think you might actually get them. They're not going to be that kind of my apartment, say that much, because they're just too much. And this massive Mac Pro from 2008, I don't need a tower.
Yeah.
Especially since at this point it's outclassed by pretty much any cheap laptop I can get. Not that I'm going to go cheap. Remember, quality. I'm going to have to figure that whole thing out. It's going to be an experience that's going to be insane, hopefully.
No, the show makes me happy, Ayaz. I feel a lot better listening to the show.
You know, like I'm saying, last week I was talking about being a fraud, because this show is about me trying to find peace, because I'm not there. Sure as hell not there. You know, just really, I'm still trying to figure it out. And there's lots of stressful situations going on right now. You know, at work, we're going to be doing coverage of WWDC tomorrow. So that's going to be, you know, massively fast. You know, there's going to be lots of different things that need to change very quickly. And so that's stressful. And then there's, you know, this whole move thing a new wrinkle with my dogs. I didn't realize that the airline that used to fly out dogs called Pet Airways, they are no longer in business. Now, this airline used to service like 13 different airports or regions, and they had kennels that were in the main cabin. So if you've heard horror stories of dogs dying in the cargo holds, that's because a lot of them are not climate controlled. And this airline came as a way around that. And I really liked them, but they closed, and I didn't realize they'd closed shops. And now we have to find a new thing. And once they are set, once the dogs are set, I can then get my own flight plan, and then I can start the horrible, horrible fun of selling everything if I can do that. So a lot of stress there. And when I do this show, you know, like I said last week, I felt like a fraud. It basically holds a mirror to myself at times, because I'm like, if I can hold it together to do this program, no matter how crazy the day is, it makes me think about, okay, wait a second. You know, you want to be happy. I want to be happy. All of us want to be happy. I don't think there's anybody out there who's like, you know what? I don't want to be happy. Everybody wants to be happy. And so, like, we're all in this giant struggle together and trying to figure out what it takes. And, you know, what works for me, what works for Andrew, might not work for you. But sometimes hearing somebody's ideas might trigger something. And you're like, okay, well, maybe that'll do it. Maybe this will be the way that I'll find some kind of peace and happiness. And I'm hoping one day, once I get to my apartment in Manhattan, I won't have to move anymore for a while. For a while, I mean 3 years. Just that's, for some reason, that sounds like a good number of years.
That's a good number of years. Listen, committing to anything for 3 years is gigantic, especially when it comes to a place. And, you know, you've moved a lot over the last couple of years. So I think three years is a nice little number for you.
I think that'll be nice. You know, I don't want to pack up. And CR1 is suggesting in the chat room, just dress your dogs in hats and dark glasses. No one will notice. That's a great idea. I wish I could do that. Maybe I should wear dark glasses. They're Labradors. They can look like service dogs. Now there's a trick, but they're not well behaved enough, I think. I don't know if they can truly lead me around. It's an interesting idea, but I think it'll make me happier to spend more money to make sure they are taken safe and secure and not thrown off the airplane. Thanks for the idea, CR1. I think we should wrap up this impromptu time. We normally do the show at 2 o'clock Pacific on Sundays.
5 p.m. now, East.
5 p.m. Eastern. And of course, that is not going to be true at all for all of the rest of this month, because first of all, it's June 1st and we did the show early. And then next week, I think I'm in an airplane, and the next week I'm like at a wedding. And I think the next week I'm moving. So like, I don't know what day we're doing this show. We'll figure that out, or what time we're doing this show. And I'll try to do my best to keep pumping out programs for you fine folks. And if you like this show, you know, go to iTunes and, you know, write a review. 5 stars. If you don't like the show, go to iTunes, write a review. 1 star. I don't care. Just tell me. I'd love to hear your feedback on this program. You can always find me on Twitter at Iaz. Andrew Zarian, thanks for dropping by and taking care of stuff.
Oh, thank you.
Do you need to promote anything, considering like your logo is all over this freaking thing?
No, there's nothing. It's just my Twitter at Andrew Zarian. Everybody knows what I do at this point. Oh, the IIB. I'll promote that. If you're a podcaster, if you, you're getting into podcasting, you're an audio expert, check out the IAIB. That's iBroadcast Network, iBroadcastNetwork.org, IIB Broadcasting. We have a great forum. If any advice you need, there's a bunch of people on there, a lot of experts willing to help you out.
It's a great resource. I've used it from time to time, and I'm probably going to be looking it over again, considering like all my equipment is hideously outdated. So like, I'm really looking to streamline and then go with a much smaller setup. And so there are lots of different items I think I need to pick up. But, you know, I'm gonna bitch right now. It is really expensive to move across country. I'll tell you that. Not only is it really expensive to move across the country, but doing with two animals is way harder. And to not be able to fly out to see the places and have and rely on people to like look around for you, that's another pain in the butt. And while trying to maintain a job and trying to do everything else. So that's me bitching and moaning about it, because I just needed to get that out. It's going to be fun, though. I'm excited to move. I'm excited to be in Manhattan, of all places. Can't believe I'm getting to go to Manhattan, finally. It's been a long freaking time.
Listen, try moving cross town in Manhattan. That's as expensive as moving cross country.
Yeah, I'm not. Look, I didn't want to be on the west side. I will say that directly. I was thinking about east side. But the deal on the west side was so good. The traffic, the actual commute was so minuscule. I'm getting back 2 hours per day.
That's 2 insanely hours. Good.
So like, I can sleep in, I can stay up, I can still get those 2 hours back. That's the crazy part about this. So I'm really freaking excited about that. And the west side, pretty freaking nice. I'm by the History Museum. I'm by the park. You know, it's a walker's paradise kind of thing. I love that idea, because I'm not going to have a car relatively soon. So anyway, so that's me blathering on a little bit more. So if, again, subscribe to the show. You can find all those links at gfqnetwork.com. You can watch us live whenever I actually do this. So go ahead and follow at Iaz on Twitter, because I'll tell you when I'm broadcasting live. I think that does it for us. Good luck in being happy, people. Because remember, we're all part of this giant struggle. You know, we're all in this together. So if somebody's having a bad day, you know, don't take it out on them. Just be nice to them. They might actually smile. It's a crazy thing.